Hi, I'm Mike Dilk and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family and your friends. Each week I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thank you for joining me on the Relax Back UK show this week. Today, two very important health topics. The dangers of both, I think, probably are well known to everyone.
Culture thinks a tan is a good, healthy thing, a healthy glow, as it's described. But no, actually, a tan is damaged skin that is at great risk of DNA changes, you know, which can lead to cancer.
The first topic is skin cancer with Dr. Christian Jessen, who many of us know from the TV series Embarrassing Bodies. Then with dietitian Helen Bond, we chat about obesity.
Two-thirds of adults are now classified as being overweight, so they have a BMI over 25 or obese, which is a BMI over 30. And this statistic has been increasing year on year.
So please do stay with me for a great show. Thank you. I really did enjoy my chat with Dr. Christian Jessen. I know him from Embarrassing Bodies, as I suspect a lot of people do. But I asked him, my first question was, what are you up to now?
Well, yeah, I mean, for me, of course, it still repeats on the telly a lot. But for me, that was 100 years ago, really. So it's just depressing when I see it because I realise how young I looked then and how much older I look now. But I'm much more... I do still a lot of media, less telly, and I'm busy in clinics now seeing real patients, which I sort of enjoy, and I suppose was what I trained for in the first place.
Absolutely. So you're a medic. What's your specialty?
Well, I deal with sexual health, particularly, and psychosexual medicine, which is a really fascinating branch of medicine. It's all the sort of, well, not to belittle it, but I suppose if we could lightly call it sexual hang-ups and the sort of psychological issues around why sex is difficult. But that can also mean really quite heavy and traumatic stuff like the long-term results of sexual abuse and sexual trauma and how to get people past that and living healthy lives and having normal sex lives.
Goodness me. All right. That sounds like quite potentially a heavy day at the office. You know,
it is. I mean, it's hugely rewarding. I mean, if you take the sort of basic, you know, sexual infection, sexual health, which is a big part of it, I love that branch of medicine because people come into my clinic absolutely terrified, looking mortified, looking sheepish, looking guilty, and you know, they usually leave either better, cured, reassured, an awful lot happier. And there's actually not very many branches of medicine where you can do that quite so instantaneously. So that's very pleasing.
No, all right, that sounds wonderful. Perhaps we should draw things back a little back to the topic today, which is skin cancer. When you were doing Embarrassing Bodies, did you come across any skin cancers and kind of say to the patient or the, you know, the person who was on the program saying, actually, you need to get referred now, not tomorrow, kind of this afternoon, because this is potentially quite serious.
I mean, we did. We wouldn't have shown it, so you would never have seen it. So we tended not to do cancers at all, just because I think the implications for the patients were such that it didn't seem right to splash that bit, you know, all over the telly.
Sure.
But skin problems are so common. We saw an awful lot of skin things. And of course, you know, a lot of them were the suspicious lesions that needed quite urgent attention. Yeah.
And so although you said that was a long time ago, you
yeah.
know, Embarrassing Bodies is still repeated on the telly. So kind of I'm fascinated to know when you go out for dinner or go down the pub, do sort of people tap you on the shoulder and start to take
yes.
their trousers down and say, here, can you have a look at this?
It's slightly ruder than that usually. And usually accompanies the sound, whoa, you know, for something. But yeah, I'm not going to get away from that. And you know what? It's recognition that's nice. It means the show resonated, I think, and either rightly or wrongly. It's yeah. the kids. No,
the show definitely resonated. I mean, it's a real success. And I suppose that's just something, in some, like you said, you're just going to have to deal with.
I mean, you know, they're not being rude or particularly offensive necessarily. I think it shows that they remember the show. It had a brand recognition, and hopefully also they'll have remembered some bits of it that might, you know, serve them in the future or has served them even now, some of the medical facts.
Yes. Yeah.
Not just looking at willies, is it? Hopefully.
Good point. So on as far as skin cancer goes, skin cancer and melanoma, which is kind of, which is a more serious type of skin cancer, I think. Is that right? How many people actually get it and suffer from it?
Well, I mean, current estimates, we think about 17,000 cases a year in the UK, and that's set to increase really quite dramatically. And that's really one of the reasons why we are always, it may feel like, trying to talk about and raise awareness of skin problems, because if not entirely preventable, you know, it is on the main part preventable. UV light, sunlight, is one of the main causes of skin cancer. So if you can do your best to avoid overdosing on UV light, then you ought to be able to reduce your risks of developing these sorts of skin cancers really quite significantly. And that's what this is all about.
Yeah, of course. And so just mentioned melanoma. Is that a type of skin cancer or something
is.
Different?
So you'll think of it as a mole that goes funny, you know, a mole that looks suspicious. Now, just to confuse things, not all melanomas are brown and look like moles, but that's for us to worry about rather than the public to worry about. But yes, essentially, it's a sort of mole that looks dodgy and it becomes cancerous. So it starts to divide, you know, unregulated, it spreads and it can kill, unfortunately.
Yeah. And if you have skin cancer, you know, what are your chances? You know, because a lot of people do die from it, don't they?
They do, unfortunately. I mean, I think rather than quote you all sorts of complicated facts and figures, I think, you know, the simplest thing is to say is if it's caught early, it's eminently treatable and curable. And that's really the thing I suppose I want people to take away with them. You know, catch things early. And the only way you're going to catch things early is to know what your skin looks like, what lumps and bumps you have currently, what size they are, what bumpiness they are, how do they feel, and therefore to notice if that changes, you know, as you age. That's all there is to it.
Right. So kind of know your body. But to some extent, you know, we're bombarded with stories. And, you know, I'm not saying that they're not true. GPs are really pushed for time.
Yeah.
And there's a real time pressure. So is there a chance that, you know, they could miss things?
Of course there is. I mean, doctors are only human, aren't we? And we miss things. We have bad days. We try not to. We really try not to. But so there are things. And one of the
I think that so often. I have a bad day at work and I say to myself, well, actually, it doesn't really matter very much. But it's a bit different for some other people.
Well, you know, the pressure's there. We try not to. And you know, I think the important thing as a doctor is if you think you have had a bad day or missed, that you actually have the balls to go back and say, I'd like to have another look at that. Or I'd like you to come back in and chat to me because that wasn't a great consultation that we had. That's, you know, a really key thing. But actually, what I think this segues quite nicely into is that there are other options for patients. So, you know, checking moles is an obvious one. I think a lot of people feel I'm not going to make a GP appointment just to have a look at a mole. Come on. But actually, well, A, why not? That's what your doctor's there for, quite frankly. But B, there are other things. So there's this great app that I wanted to talk about called Skin Vision. And one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it is because I know there's a lot of controversy about AI. Isn't it? Artificial intelligence, people are suspicious of it and not. But this is a great example.
Yes, I mean, they are. I often say I prefer real intelligence.
Well, I mean, if you listen to this, it's a great example of this sort of computer learning. So moles, you know, it takes quite a long time to train as a dermatologist to be able to spot a dodgy mole at 100 yards. But AI, a good, clear photograph, you know, a computer can use algorithms to assess that mole and really give you a very accurate indication of its risk. It's not going to give you a specific diagnosis, but it'll say to you, this looks dodgy. No, that looks all right. And of course, the more it does it, the better it gets. And if you couple that in with dermatologists who also look and check that they also agree with its answers, you can see that over time that will become a very powerful tool for this sort of diagnostic.
So this is an app and you can take a photo of something you're worried about.
Yeah. So all of my working life, I've been telling patients to photograph things. Photograph things you're worried about because it's really useful. You know, things are hard to describe. A picture is great. And also a picture can be compared. You know, a picture 3 months ago can be compared with a state now. And that's really useful for me to make a diagnosis, to know how things are changing. So an app, again, it's a way of sort of storing your pictures, if you like, and analysing your pictures, doesn't necessarily involve a doctor straight away. And it is a sort of instant dose of reassurance or an instant kick up the bum to get you to go and do something about it.
Okay. All right. So there's two things going on here, I suppose. So if you take a photo of something you're worried about, there's a whole AI sort of system checking it out.
Yeah.
Now, the thing about AI is it learns, doesn't it, from previous photos, previous information.
Yeah.
So does it tune into kind of a massive overall database in the whole of the UK, or is it just sort of tuning into just the database that this particular app has?
Well, that's a good question. Probably it's because of issues with confidentiality and you can't all share your pictures necessarily. I mean, things can be anonymized. The idea, in an ideal world, people wouldn't be suspicious, and all of these millions of pictures of moles can all be pulled together. The data can all be pulled from them. And that would be, a massively powerful tool for diagnostics and working forward. I don't know the specifics of this app. I suspect, confidentiality is a real issue. So they're not just sending your pictures off anywhere. But, the more people that use it, the more it learns. And remember, you've also got sort of dermatologists in the background keeping an eye on things. So you've got that level of experience as well as the computer learning experience. So it's a sort of double whammy.
When do the dermatologists have a look at the photo?
Well,
AI can't figure it out?
Well, they'll possibly, but, they'll keep an eye on things to check that it's getting the answers right. So, they will, I presume, randomly look at samples as well and see if they agree with the answer that the AI gave, that the app gave. And that's an important, a process going forward.
Sure. Now, I'm kind of tight, and I don't change my phone very often. I don't even know what I've got an iPhone, but I don't even know what sort it is. But it's a pretty old one. And
yeah.
The camera is a lot more basic than some of the newer ones. Now, if for someone like me who's got an old camera on their phone, is it going to work?
Probably, I would say, make sure the lens is nice and clean. I think the most important thing, actually, your camera will be so much better than any camera you had when you were, 20 years ago, let's be honest. But the most important thing is the lighting, I think. Good daylight is probably the best, good natural light. If it's a part of you that you can get out in daylight without shocking the old ladies, that's the key thing. And also what I tell people, if this is just a photo generally, not specifically for this app, put something near the thing that you're taking so we can assess size. So put a coin or a ruler is really helpful as well.
Right.
But probably natural daylight on a nice bright day is the best.
All right. Now,
and your phone won't be that bad, I promise you, the camera-wise. Technology is so good compared to...
I can imagine that. The fact is, new phones are much, much better, but mine is probably still pretty good. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Now, was this thing developed? Because I know a lot of cancer technology, cancer knowledge, and probably skin cancer technology and knowledge has been developed essentially with white people. Does this stuff, do lesions, skin cancers, do they look different on black people, brown people, or even, someone who's quite tan?
That's a really good question. And it's been an issue in medicine for a long time now. If you look at the good old clunky medical textbooks, all the pictures of things were nearly always on white people and white skins. And of course, dermatological conditions do look very different on dark skins, on black skins, on brown skins. Yeah, absolutely. So, that will be, this app will need to deal with that. That will be part of its learning experience, of course, and part of the job of the dermatologist to guide it to make sure that it can also, deal with all those sorts of things, as any doctor needs to be able to. You can't just say, I'm only going to look at lesions on white skins. Of course you can't.
Yeah. And of course, everyone gets skin cancer. It's not just white people. I mean, white people might be more prone, I suppose.
You're right. I mean, the famous example that's probably too much quoted, unfortunately, is Bob Marley died of a melanoma. It's what killed him. And black skin, a dark pigmented lesion. I think if I'm right, you're going to get lots of angry calls in now as I get this wrong. But it was somewhere like on his foot or under a nail or somewhere unfortunate that just made spotting it a little bit harder, I think.
So the story I heard, on his big toe.
Oh, there you go. I nearly got it right, didn't I? So on his big toe, and I think it was under a nail, which kind of is unfair, really. I mean, not that getting a melanoma isn't unfair, but, it just makes it all the more likely that you might not notice it.
Yeah, goodness me. All right. So you take your photo and send it in via the app.
Mm.
How long till you get the results?
You should get it fairly instantaneously. I unless you... I think if things come back, you know, high risk, then it'll be looked at again, won't it? It'll be assessed again. But it should give you fairly fast results. So after all, how long does a computer take to do an awful lot of computations and come back with an answer? Not very long at all, is it?
No. In theory, you're right. Yeah, it could be back the next second. And what sort of answers, what sort of information do you get? Does it say, what? Okay, this is potentially difficult. You need to go and see your GP
exactly
tomorrow.
Yeah. In a nutshell, it could give you a sort of risk assessment, and probably as basic as, I'm sure this will keep being adjusted as time goes on, but it'll be as basic as a low risk and a high risk, or a medium risk. Let's have another look in 3 months, something like that. Or, no, carry on with your usual skin, care routines, and we'll check you again in 6 months, because that's how often we should check our skins, something like that.
Okay. And so is this thing available with private health insurance, or how does it work?
Well, this is now an NHS endorsed app. So although there are elements that you do need to pay for, and don't ask me all the ins and outs of those, but you know, that is, I think as a sort of basic tool for people who want reassurance, I think it's really useful, and it's free. To answer the question, which I failed to do, yes, it is also available. So there are a lot of health insurers who do provide the app as well. And I think that shows that they've thought about it and think that it's a good thing for improving health.
But it's a free app.
It's a free app, essentially. There are paid for components to it, but it's essentially a free app.
Goodness. All right. So could, in fact, GPs could start to use it? If someone comes and says, I'm a bit worried about this, they could get their phone out and take a photo and...
Absolutely. You know, and where's the shame in that, really? I think that's a good thing. I think using technology to help you, make more accurate diagnoses is a good thing. There's nothing wrong with looking stuff up. I always tell my students that, if you don't know, look it up. Don't just pretend that you know it, because that doesn't help anybody.
I love technology. And actually, I suspect that technology in all many different forms, this and others, can do a lot of good for the NHS.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I do too. I think we're overly suspicious of it, actually. And I think a lot of it is sort of, that WhatsApp type paranoia stuff that flies around. But I think this is a really good example of where you can pull, vast amounts of data. I tell you where AI has also been used is with assessing smear tests in women, looking at cells, slides on cells, and assessing which have changes in that need to be dealt with. That's, anything like that where you're looking at lots and lots of little things that are all the same, essentially. I think humans are very apt to make mistakes. Of course they are, yes. Whereas a computer is much less likely to.
Yeah, okay, interesting. All right, so some good advice there. But having said all that, prevention is better than cure.
So you're good at this. You say all the right things for me, so I don't have to say them.
Yeah, well, okay. I will let on. My wife is actually a scientist, a cancer researcher. So we have some of these discussions over the dinner table a bit.
Yeah.
And she tells me off. So my wife's family is from Mumbai. Yeah. I'm very, very white. So yeah. I'm constantly getting told off for going out in the sun. So this stuff is close to my heart.
Quite right too, yeah.
So along those lines, prevention better than cure. Summer's coming. What should we be up to and thinking about?
I mean, one thing that some dermatologists say that I think quite shocks people is that any tan is damaged skin. It's not a good thing. I think the culture thinks a tan is a good, healthy thing, a healthy glow, as it's described. But no, actually, a tan is damaged skin that is at great risk of DNA changes, which can lead to cancer, and it's doing its best to try and avoid those. That's what the sort of tan is all about. So it's not a good thing. So fake is better. And we need to not underestimate how strong even feeble seeming UK sun is. And I think this is the reason why our skin cancer numbers are on the up all the time, because as soon as we get the slightest bit of nice weather, we rush out there, sleeves rolled up, trouser legs rolled up, and we sit in it in our lunch break for 15 minutes and go pink and go back inside. And that's what we do. That's not good either at all. That's actually the way to go and try and get yourself some skin cancer, really. So we
need to
get
not everybody, but you do hear about, you need a bit of sun, you need a bit of vitamin D.
And that's the tricky thing, because you're right. We also do, but it's all about when and how much, so sort of Unfortunately, the only time we get to go outside at lunchtime is probably the worst time, because sun's right overhead. It's closest to the earth. It's hottest. You know, that's not really the time to sit in it unprotected when you haven't seen any sun for the last 6 months. It's, you know, morning and evenings are the better time. And absolutely, sun on your arms and legs is a good thing. It's just the thing we fail always is the moderation. How much and how often? I think getting the idea of wearing some sunscreen or sunblock if you're going to be outside for a lot of the day is really important. There's myths that it stops you tanning and all things like that. There's so many different products available, some cheaper, some really expensive, that's a really key thing. And I think people also don't like the idea. They think, oh, a factor 30 or a factor 50, that's far too much. We don't need that in the UK. Actually, you do. And you'll age gracefully as well if you start wearing sunscreen.
So, I mean, the difference in factors is enormous. I tend to just automatically buy factor 30 or higher if I can get it. But is there any point in wearing factor 3 or 5?
No, none at all.
It doesn't do anything, does it?
No, it's a complete waste of money, I would say. I don't know why it's even made. Well, I know why it's made, but I don't know why it's bought. So, no, waste of time. You know, they're not the most efficient things. You need to apply them fairly frequently as well. And I remember as a child, I hated putting sunscreen on. It was a real pain in it. It was slimy and greasy and you got covered in sand. But you do need to sort of apply it at least every couple of hours. If you're swimming and running about and sweating, then probably more often.
Yeah. And hat. Wear a hat. Do you wear a hat?
It's not cool. I have a very fetching straw hat, actually, that I got in Mexico that I'm very fond of now. Yep, so I do.
You know what? I've got exactly the same thing, bought in Mexico as well. It's referred to as my donkey hat.
Yeah, absolutely. They make a good hat in Mexico, don't they? So I'm very fond of it. But I'm looking at you. You go pink quite quickly, don't you?
I really do. Yeah.
Yeah, and in a way that's sort of good because it's your warning that, and you probably go pink in about 5 minutes, I would guess. Do you?
Yes.
You know, and you're sort of lucky, I suppose, in that you're aware, and your wife starts shouting at you, and in you go to get your hat or get out of the sun. But I think for the people that can sit in it without too many problems, it doesn't mean they're better at dealing with the sun necessarily, or that they're at less risk of developing, you know, skin problems as a result of the sun. It's just that possibly they'll be less aware of it.
Yeah. Okay. Fantastic. Couple more questions, if I may.
Of course.
I was just Googling a little bit to do a bit of research for this chat, and I came across something which I'd never heard of before. Some research that's happening at University of Warwick right now.
Yeah.
They've developed a scanner that uses terahertz waves, and apparently you can map a tumor of skin tumor very, very accurately using this. So if you chop it out, you can chop just that out and leave good skin.
Right.
Have you come across that at all?
It's obviously a work in process. I mean, there's always these sorts of things. I mean, terahertz is a type of electromagnetic frequency, isn't it? Essentially.
That's right.
Clearly, the problem with surgery, let's be honest, I'm sure in 100 years' time, we're going to find pretty much all surgery that we do now as being shockingly crude. You know, the ideal is to just remove the bits you want to remove and leave good, healthy bits. That's all dependent on how it looks, how good the surgeon is, how good his vision is, how accessible it is, except, you know, 100 things. The more you can sort of pinpoint that, the more preserving surgery can be, the less traumatic, skin cancer is a good example of where the surgery is usually pretty extensive because you tend to have to take away really quite a wide margin around the area of cancer itself to make absolutely sure that you've removed enough. Nobody wants to have to keep going back every few weeks for another operation.
Yeah. So you kind of err on the conservative side and hack
out
a bit more.
You absolutely do. And I think most people would prefer if you did that. But unfortunately, you know, skin cancers quite often come on the ears, on the face, on the scalp, and you can see immediately where the problems come in. If you're having to remove quite a lot, it becomes very difficult for patients.
Yes. All right. Now, if people are listening to this and thinking, right, I need to find out a bit more about this, a bit more about this particular app, how to keep myself safe, etc., how to check my body for changes in moles and all this kind of thing. What's a good source where they can get a bit more info?
Well, I mean, always go and look on the NHS, but also you can have a look at the app. It's in the App Store, whichever App Store. I'm a Mac user, so for me it's, you know, that Mac store, but whichever one you happen to use, it's there. Download it, have a look at it. It'll explain all how to use it. There's lots of information and things there as well.
What's it called again?
A good start.
What is the app called again?
Oh, I'm sorry, it's called Skin Vision. skin okay. vision.
All right, excellent. All right, well, look, thank you very much for taking the time to talk about this. What's next for you? When are we going to see you next on the telly?
Well, you know, I'm there's something in the pipeline. I'm very interested in, I've gone off on a real tangent now, in sort of, I've always been a rabid atheist, actually, all right? But as I get older, I can see the merits of spirituality. I can understand that. It's not because any cliche, like I'm afraid of death and that sort of thing, but I can see. So I'd love to go off somewhere really spiritual, like Tibet or India or somewhere like that, and start to sort of see where the crossover is between health, for instance, and spirituality, rather than my rather rabid, oh, it's all nonsense, you know? So that's, I hope to do something about that. At some
that
point
sounds in very interesting. I would like to invite you back on to talk about that when you've got that rolling.
If I do it, okay, absolutely.
Okay, I will hold you to that.
Absolutely.
All right, look, Dr. Christian, thank you so much for chatting. I think this stuff is really important. So many
good.
Thanks.
Thank you for having me. Bye bye.
Well.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
My next guest is the dietitian Helen Bond, and we chat about all sorts of things to do with obesity. However, my first question to her was, what is the difference between a dietitian and a nutritionist?
Well, a registered dietitian is a protected title. So you have to have had a degree in dietetics, and in case my case, 4-year degree in dietetics. Whereas a nutritionist, you can also be a registered nutritionist with a degree qualification, but you can also call yourself a nutritionist without any qualifications. So it's important to check the nutrition qualifications of those that you're speaking to.
Yeah, if they're registered somewhere, there's a few
and if
different
they're
places,
registered.
There are a few different places you can be registered, which is a bit complicated as well, I think, isn't it?
But with the nutritionist, it's the Association for Nutrition. They're a registered nutritionist, which means they've been qualified pretty much to degree level or have similar qualifications to that.
Yeah, so it's important to check that out, because actually I could call myself a nutritionist, charge you for help and advice. You'd be crazy to take it, obviously, but, you know, I could do that and I wouldn't be arrested.
Yeah, and I think that's the worry, because that's where misinformation comes out. Whereas, like I said, as registered dietitian, we're evidence-based, and therefore you can trust the advice that you're getting. And that's why I always say trust a dietitian, because we're giving, you know, sound advice based on evidence and facts rather than making up things, which causes nutrition confusion. And obviously that's causing a lot of problems out there because people don't know where to turn to.
Yes, well, we will probably touch on that a little bit later as well. So the topic, obesity, I must admit, I did a little bit of digging into stats, and apparently in the world, there are more than 1 billion people that are obese in the global population, which struck me as extraordinary. Do we know how many there are in the UK?
Yeah, and I think just on a world thing, I mean, when they did the world stats, because obviously we're talking about World Obesity Day, one in four of us will be living with obesity by 2035, which is quite a scary statistics. But coming back to home and the UK, you know, 2/3 of adults are now classified as being overweight. So they have a BMI over 25 or obese, which is a BMI over 30. And this statistic has been increasing year on year. And I think worse still, we have 1 in 3 children leaving primary school above a healthy weight. So there's clearly a lot that we need to do to help reverse this this onward train in terms of increasing levels of obesity.
Well, that one of the questions I was going to ask is kind of what is fat and what is obese? And you just gave some figures there what were they again?
Yeah, so we talk about BMI, which is weight to height ratio. So anything over a BMI of 25 is considered overweight, and a BMI over 30 is considered obese. So you think that's quite scary. But actually, if you go online, the NHS has a website. You can just put in your stats for weight and height, and it will calculate your BMI. And it just gives you a gauge in terms of what you should be. But also, it's important to say where that fat is actually distributed. And we should also be looking at, you know, not having as much fat around our waist, for example, and where the fat is distributed. So it's not all about BMI. It's other things as well.
Okay, perhaps we can try and give an example. Me, for instance, okay, I'm 15 and a quarter stone, which if people are listening elsewhere, that's 214 pounds or 97 kilograms, right? I'm 6 foot tall or 1.83 meters tall. And if you look at me coming down the street, you don't think, my goodness, that guy's huge. He needs to do something about his weight. But I am a bit fat. So okay. What camp might I fall into?
So let's have a go again, the stats. Let's just give me your height again in terms of centimetres.
Okay, I'm 1.83 metres, so 183 centimetres.
183 centimetres. And what's your weight in kilograms if you do, or you can tell me in pounds?
97.
97. Let's have a look. So I'm going to just do a quick calculation if you just bear with me. So your BMI is 28.9. So that puts you in the overweight category. So you could obviously benefit from making maybe some healthy changes to your diet to maybe lose some weight. But what BMI doesn't take into account, which is what I don't like, is that it doesn't take into account where that fat is actually distributed. And you could also be very, I don't know you, so you could have a lot of muscle there, which also weighs more than fat. So BMI is one measurement, but it's not the only measurement that you should be looking at.
Sure. Well, which comes on to another question. I was kind of interested. I am a bit fat. You know, I could easily lose a stone or two, but I'm reasonably fit. You know, I can, you know, go for a 5 mile run.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm pretty active. So if you're fat but fit or relatively fit, which I probably that's a category I fall into. What do you say to that?
Well, like I said, I mean, that's great if you're in the BMI, if you're slightly over, but you're fit and you have a lot of muscle, which weighs more than fat. I'd say have a look at your waist circumference. So for a man, ideally a waist circumference below 37 inches, so or 94 centimetres, is considered low risk. So where fat is distributed, obviously it increases your risk of things like high blood levels of fat or high blood pressure and also diabetes through insulin resistance. So don't just look at BMI, look at where your fat is actually distributed.
Okay, so you touched on it then. You know, what's the problem? What, you know, so I'm a bit fat, so what problems is this potentially going to cause me or anyone else for that matter?
Well, living with excess weight or obesity can increase your risk of numerous conditions, not least coronary heart disease or heart disease and circulatory disease, which is our biggest killer in the UK, but also different types of cancers. So achieving a healthy weight is really important.
Right. Cancer. Okay. Do we know which cancers it tends to be a problem for?
I think many cancers, I can't remember off the top, but many cancers from throat cancers to breast cancer, just to name a few, are linked to obesity. I mean, obesity is linked to many, many cancers. So again, trying to achieve and maintain a healthy weight is of utmost importance.
Okay. Now, the problem's getting worse. We're always told the problem's getting worse.
Yeah.
But I must admit, sometimes I think we must be like diverging into two species, because there's so much every time, you know, the London Marathon comes on, there's, you know, thousands of people doing the marathon, mm-hmm. and all the other runs that happen, you know, thousands of people attend these and do the run and people watch and must get inspired. Been told actually everyone's becoming a couch potato. It seems like we must be becoming two different species, you know, the fitties and the fatties. Is that kind of your experience?
I think we're all individual and we all have individual goals. You know, obviously we have a problem with being overweight and obese, and also looking at the stats for Health Survey for England, which gives us an insight into the nation's health, certainly says that sadly, men are more likely to, than women to be overweight and obese, and people aged 45 to 74 are most likely to be overweight or obese. So again, there's different camps. So everyone's individual. Some people are very keen on looking after their health, and other people it falls down the list of priorities, or they're not as motivated, and hence why we have to, you know, we have a problem with obesity in the UK.
Yeah, I mean that much is definite. But how about some of the causes? Why is it getting worse? You know, what there must be some underlying causes here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, you know, in terms of causes of obesity, and we can't get away from the fact that we're taking in either too many calories and we're not expending enough through physical activity. It's true that many of us aren't achieving the recommendation of 150 minutes of moderate intensity activity a week, which we mean something that gets us a little bit hot and slightly out of breath. It could be walking, or it could be fast walking, or a simple jogging, or dancing, or even swimming. So there is that problem. But also we even an obesogenic environment as well, and the food choices that we're making sometimes not always helping us make healthier choices. So there's lots of factors. Obesity is not one single cause. Oh. It comes from lots of factors.
But my thought is, kind of, most people in their heart of hearts, they know what a good diet is, really. You know, fresh fruit and veg, you know, less alcohol, all that sort of thing. I'm sure. Yeah. Most people really know that. So this kind of reminding of what a good diet is, I sometimes think, is that really the problem?
No, I mean, it's interesting what you say. Most people know what they should be eating. That's maybe true. But again, we've done some stats by the nutrition focused mobile app Yazio, which showed, you know, 49% of people found that lack of nutrition knowledge was the biggest challenge they faced when losing weight. You know, there's lots of other reasons that, you know, 45% said that the cost of healthy food. And a lot of people said also, you know, a third of those also surveyed said they didn't have time to plan and cook nutritional meals. So these are all different factors. So you say most people know that they should be eating a healthy, balanced diet, but it's putting it into action. And people get confused. There is so much misinformation out there surrounding nutrition now. Plus, no shortage of kind of faddy celebrity endorsed diets promising an easy way to lose weight. So it's no wonder many people are confused about nutrition and what we should be and shouldn't be eating for good health and to look after our waistlines too.
Yeah, I must admit, I tend to think it's a change in habit is what habits are what are required. Because you said, like, even if people might know that what a good diet is, it's, you know, not enough time to sort of plan and spend a bit of time cooking things from scratch. That therefore a change in habit, which is a lot harder to make happen, I think.
It is indeed. And habits take time to form. And that's why I don't like, you know, I always say forget the fads, because, you know, the diet mentality, even just, you know, inferring to going on a diet tends to have a start and a stop date. So you only change what you're eating during these times. The result is when you finish the diet, you tend to go back to the same eating habits that piled on the pounds in the first place. So for me, it's trying to get people to change people's eating habits for good, and the benefits that eating well has on for life. Besides losing weight, we're talking a healthier gut, we're talking a sharper mind, stronger immunity, maybe it's fewer wrinkles, and lowering our risk of cancer and having a healthier heart too. So there's lots of benefits to eating well, not just weight. So look beyond that. For me, I always say,
nice.
Yeah, it tastes, I mean, food is one of life's great pleasures. Well, it is, absolutely, for me. And as a dietitian, a lot of people think, gosh, I'm going to tell people to cut things out, whereas actually for me as a dietitian, I always say focus on foods to add in rather than take out, because it's a great strategy for healthy eating. And it's much more sustainable to achieving and maintaining a healthy weight too.
Something else I just want to ask you about, you did mention it. You talk about diets sort of mentioned by celebrities and, yeah, and that kind of thing. I must admit, I have a general rule that if there's anything, almost anything, that's peddled by a celeb, I kind of ignore it. I mean, there are one or two exceptions to that, mm-hmm. for sure. But
Because obviously I'd like everyone to come to the professionals like us as dietitians or registered nutritionists, because we've got the nutrition qualifications to actually, you know, sift through all of the rubbish out there and present you with the facts.
Because if someone's good at singing or dancing or football or whatever, it doesn't mean that they're going to be an expert at nutrition. Like, I suspect you wouldn't attempt to play professional football, would you?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And, you know, to obtain a degree in dietetics or nutrition, you know, it took me 4 years to get there. You know, so it's a lifetime of kind of knowledge that you're building up. So often these celebrities often have a cookbook to sell or a piece of merchandise. So you think, well, can I actually trust them? And now the world of Instagram and Instagurus, you know, they have little nutrition qualifications apart from a lifetime of eating. So I definitely would like to get off that and focus on, you know, evidence-based nutrition and, you know, helping people establish healthy eating habits. And that's really what I would say on World Obesity Today, is helping people to establish healthy eating habits and how we, and the tools that can help people get there.
Yeah. What about some tech things? Can they help? Yeah. I'm thinking kind of old-fashioned calorie counting and that sort of thing, because, you know, some people like tech and will engage with it. Sometimes I think tech might provide a different focus. You know, you focus not on the problem but on something else. I don't, that may or may not help. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, I mean, technology is there to help. I mean, obviously, it's not for everyone. And I mean, certainly coming back to diet, you know, I mean, you know, calorie counting has always been one of the most widely used methods of dieting. And as a dietitian, I always say self-monitoring is a great method that can help people with weight loss and also help people stick to a healthy, balanced diet. And as a dietitian, I've said to people, you know, write it down, you know, start with food diary, because it gives people good insights into the eating habits. So it could be something as simple as writing everything down on a notepad, so no tech involved, but a digital record using nutrition apps like the Yazio Nutrition Focus mobile app can help you. It's a far more accurate than a traditional written food diary, and it can make it really easy to do. You know, they've got barcode scanners for quick searching, and it's easy to log in on a day-to-day basis, so it can track not only your calories but also it can look at your diet quality, so things like your carbs, your protein, your fats, and also vitamins and minerals and fiber. Gosh, we need to have more fiber in our diet. But also it tracks not just what you're eating, but also helps you track your activities too. And like I said, it's that balance between calories in and calories out. It just makes it easier to monitor those and balance our whole diet too.
Now, I must admit, I have used a food app. I can't remember what it was called, but I did find it quite useful.
Yeah.
But the converse of that, actually, a while ago, my wife bought me one of these wearables to assess, you know, how many steps you take and how well you sleep.
A pedometer.
Well, it wasn't quite. It was a bit more sophisticated than that. And I remember wearing it in bed, and the idea was it would see how you slept. And one time I sort of rolled over, woke up, and my wife said, "Morning, darling, how did you sleep?" And I said, "Hang on a moment, I don't know. Let me just have a look at my phone, which talks to my wearable," you know, which it had just gone a bit too far. I thought, no, this is crazy. And I stopped wearing it after that, because actually, you know, I knew how well I slept because I'd just woken up. But on the whole, I do like tech stuff.
Yeah, and I think they're there to help us. You know, that's what they're there to do. They're there to help us. And, you know, you just need to look at some of the success stories. I know certainly with the Yazio a nutrition focused app, you know, just look at the success stories of how it's helped people on their weight loss journey, or just helping people to be eat better, and, you know, not necessarily sleep better, but it just makes you a little bit more mindful of what's going on. The other things that it does also within the app, you know, it focuses not just on what you're eating, but also maybe why you're eating and why you're turning to comfort food. And if you note those down, sometimes you can start to see patterns and therefore spot opportunities for alternative solutions to managing them.
All this is very interesting, hopefully very useful to people. If people are listening and think, right, now's the time, I'm going to start making some changes in my everyday habits, my lifestyle, etc., can you suggest some resources for them?
Well, first of all, I'd say certainly if you've got any medical issues, you know, like I said, obesity is multifactorial. You know, it could be a diet, lifestyle. It could also be medical reasons as well, like an underactive diary, for example. So you've got any medical issues or you're concerned about your weight, this obesity, World Obesity Day, and want tailored dietary advice, then definitely check in with your doctor and get help from a registered dietitian. So that'd be the first thing. But then if you're wanting to just have a good insight into your diet and just start to look at your diet more closely, then I would definitely recommend the Yazio Nutrition Focused and Calorie Counter app, because it's really simple and it could help you on your weight loss journey. So check out the website yazio.com or just download the app. It's actually free to get the basic version. But if you want to unlock the app's full potential, and because they've got loads of recipes out there, then just upgrade to the Yazio Pro app.
Okay. And is there good advice on the NHS website?
Yeah, there's loads of advice on the NHS website, and there's loads of advice on my organisation, the British Dietetic Association. They've got loads of food fact sheets as well to help you if you're just wanting general science-based evidence, tips and hints to help you on your weight loss journey.
Very good. Helen, thank you very much indeed for chatting. Very useful.
Good to speak to you.
Thank you very much to both my guests on this week's show, and they were Dr. Kristen Jessen talking about skin cancer and Helen Bond, who's a dietitian, talking about obesity. And of course, a big thank you to you for listening, and have a healthy week until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.